back into 20 years ago, if I asked the business, hey, this is important, we don't have a budget for that. Always excuse, you know. But now I'm glad to see more and more organization understanding that we need to put a security part of our development. Doesn't matter if we're standing up an agent for AI, do we have a zero trust on the environment?
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crow expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crow.
Awesome. Thank you again for joining me on another episode of the Protect It All podcast. Today, I have Sue with me here today. So thank you so much, Sue, for taking time. As it happens, a lot of the time with these is we have to worry about schedules, and we both have jobs and everybody has life and all the things and travel. So thank you so much for being kind with me and rescheduling. We were supposed to do this earlier this week, and you were very gracious in rescheduling this. And thank you so much for being here. With that, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, tell the audience your background, all the fun things that we need to know about you.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad to be here and honored and humbled to be here. So thank you for having me. It is something that I'm having the same background as you. I'm passionate to educate people and to get them awareness about specifically in my field, in cybersecurity field. My background, I've been developer before prior my career in cybersecurity. I'm always as a person, I'm always curious, and that landed me the job into cybersecurity because of my curiosity. When I was a developer back in early 2000, I was already developer prior, entering the workforce because I'm specialized in developing application when I went to college. So I developed different languages. Back then is, Java is a more prominent language that we do. Even in the early days, I was developing Fortran and COBOL, all the old stuff. But the logic, developing application, the method, the algorithm, all the same, pretty much other language that they're using today. So I've been in cybersecurity for 15 years. Prior that, I was a developer. Throughout 15 years, my career, I seen the landscape, the trend, back in early 2000, maybe 2010, there is nobody actually understand what cybersecurity is. And a lot of time when I was trying to present my case, doesn't matter is related a credential, related to the data and the production data being loaded in a lower environment where all the unnecessary access need to be protected. Back then in 2000, not really existed, people like foreign. So now that I'm been in cybersecurity for 15 years, I see the threat landscape is more evolved, is more advanced. That's why we need to have a cybersecurity skill that align with, not only protecting the information, but also understanding what is coming in the horizon. We need to be able to do that. And curiosity is something that get anybody, it doesn't matter me or other cyber professional, that can get them ahead of the game if they have that mentality mindset. So I've been in a different company doing mainly architecture, leadership, some engineering activity, and also culture transformation. Because everything that we do in cybersecurity is impacting not only the technical side of it, the processes, the people, the culture. And the big problem that I see so far is, you can have the most advanced technology, but if your company is not really adapting mindset of cybersecurity on the culture is not enable cybersecurity, then technology alone is not allow you to protect your company. You need to have a workforce that enable to protect it in a more like not only just a short term, but it's long term trajectory. Yeah. That is something that physically my background throughout these 15 years in cybersecurity.
I love that. You know, you're 100% right. I've said that many times in different ways, but you know, you've got people, process, and technology. It's really easy. The things that are in the news, the things that people focus on when you go to conferences, the things that people are showcasing, it's all technology. It's all the newest capabilities and technology and all the things. But the irony is as a consultant or, you know, when I'm brought in because of an incident, you know, most of the time, the things that were wrong or the things that are wrong are not fancy, sexy craziness. It's because they weren't doing basic things. They didn't have basic processes. They didn't train their people, right? Their people didn't have cybersecurity as part of their process or, thinking about, they didn't do tech, like all of these types of things. It wouldn't have helped them if they'd have had the newest, fanciest technology, if their people aren't using it and the processes don't support it. It's just sitting in the corner collecting dust.
Exactly. And then they don't take action, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Taking action out of on the detection, out of the data that we are collecting from the tool, from the detection, is more important than just detecting it. You know, so sometimes organization, we have a good tool, we have a good. No, you have to your point, you need to train your people, you need to get the mindset that certain thing that they do is impacting the cybersecurity risk. And if they don't, like the process itself, if they don't define it, if they don't have a documentation so that people can follow, doesn't matter its configuration, doesn't matter of a skill set to train people, if they don't have it in place or program, then a tool itself is not going to get them anywhere.
Well, and also we go back to, you know, we've seen tools that have failed. We see processes fail, internet goes down, like all sorts of things happen. And so I've got kids, and my oldest is 16. And he was at a friend's house a couple of weeks ago, and he had to call us because he was running late getting back for curfew. Right. He had a certain curfew and he would have made it on time. But his phone, which he was using, you know, his phone for GPS to get from this friend's house, which it was the first time he'd been to this friend's house. And he was using his phone as a GPS, you know, using Waze or whatever to get home. And the internet or the GPS stopped working. And he didn't know how to get home from where he was back to where we were. So he just kind of pulled over on the side of the road until his phone started working again. And he called us, like his cell phone was working, but the GPS wasn't. So he called us. So that's an example of he had the amazing tool, but he didn't have the basic understanding of navigation of where he was and how to get home. Like, you know, back in my day, I'd have pulled out the map, or I'd have probably known where I was anyways, but I'd have pulled out a physical map and I'd have had the map with me, or I'd have gone to a gas station and asked somebody how to get home type of thing, right? I didn't have a cell phone. I wouldn't have been able to call my parents on the side of the road, right?
I'd have just
had to figure it out.
I know that scenario is resonate with my daughter. I have a 24-year-old daughter. When she was 10 years old, we ran some truck because we didn't have any truck. And the truck that we ran is old enough that you can, you don't do the button, but you just crank it on the window. And for her, it's like, wow, this is amazing. You know, for me, it's like, if we don't have a technology to push the button and pulling out. So to your point, kid this day doesn't really so dependent on technology and so dependent on information. That's why we need to the point, we need to guard it too. So on that, all the miner across the globe, that is not only consuming the correct information, but also being protected from harm, because to your point, the moment that GPS went to side road, give you a wrong direction, it happened. Yeah. Google, it happened. Yeah. You know? So those things, it need to be validated. It need to be having a good use case now, especially in the era of AI, agentic AI, where everything is being streamlined. We need to be careful on that too. You know, that's why security need to be embedded into those, you know, AI era, because now we're trying to catch what the business want, and security is always trying to put in behind. But now that all the business know hacking, ransomware happen, they have some idea that they want security be part of it, you know, which is a good thing. Back into 20 years ago, if I asked the business, hey, this is important, we don't have a budget for that. Always excuse, you know. But now I'm glad to see more and more organization understanding that we need to put a security part of our development. Doesn't matter if we're standing up an agent for AI, do we have a zero trust on the environment? How can we consume information that is not garbage information from external network, to the point that we have a solid resolve and use case and data to all the, you know, basically how to guardrail the correct information so it's not biased, it's not hallucinate, and all those things is very important, because otherwise we are in a high speed now, and we need to be in high speed in cybersecurity too. It's not only just AI development, but how we can guardrail it to align with the velocity in developing, you know, AI work. Right now, everybody wanna embed it, but we're still kind of early trying to understand where is a good thing to implement, which type of data that can be really autonomous in AI, you know, because AI can be self-prediction compared to old days when I develop application, everything is deterministic, you know, what you put in, what you come out. But now the machine, the agent kind of, you know by itself how to basically predict a certain thing, which is we need to be cautious about it.
Yeah, you hit something there. It's really interesting that I hadn't thought about or hadn't voiced or talked about before. And, you know, same as you, like I've been working in this industry a long time, you know, and a lot of the time cyber and even technology, even beyond cyber, but technology has many times been the no, right? No, you can't do it that way. No, we need to slow down. No, we need to take this through architecture review boards, and we need to test this, and we need to pilot this. And a lot of times, I've noticed either myself and or other organizations within the business, you know, slowing down the process. And many times the business gets frustrated. Many times the business goes around you. And that has been a problem up until now. It's just gotten exponentially worse because, to your point, AI and a lot of these newer, you know, technologies really enable us to go so much faster. Right. So if we try to go at the speed we have in the past, where, you know, it takes 6 months to do something and before you can onboard something, they're going to have already piloted and tested it and implemented it before you've ever even got it to the first architecture review board. And then it's too late, because then it's part of the process and they're not going to take it out.
And that is funny you say that, because I heard a story, some like, oh, so when we detect something they develop brand new without including the security team is like, oh, yeah, we're going to include you. We're just doing POC right now. A month later, POC in a production. To your point, you know, like I'm trying to create the story that, look, I'm here to be aligned with your philosophy. If something that we can automate us in a process wise, or how we do the remediation for certain vulnerability, even a lot of our vendor that they're trying to keep up with that, you know, in a cybersecurity vendor. So I always trying to frame the story to the development team or to the business, saying, we understand your urgency, but if you take extra second or extra minute to embed security into your solution, you're going to be thankful later, because, you know, we're trying to make sure that there is a guardrail. You know, we are expert, we are a professional, we understand the need, but also we need to have a balance between a car railing, your solution with AI, having a security and keep your CISO or your CEO sleep well at night.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's to your point as well, like security and cybersecurity has become a critical path on all things, right? It doesn't matter, you know, what the product is, the capability is, whether it's the security cameras, the door badge readers, you know, the endpoint protection, the laptops, your web servers, you know, your one-off custom process that run in the manufacturing facility, you know, the aviation system and the airplanes, like whatever those things are, cyber has to be part of that conversation. Sometimes it's just to say, everything looks good. But some the other times it's going to be pushing back saying, hey, we can't do it that way because of X, Y, and Z. This can be a problem. This can be an issue. You know, the analogy I give all the time with like patching, because I come from OT, critical infrastructure, things right. like that. It's like, you know, IT people, they want to patch the machine as soon as they have a problem with it or whatever. I'm like, imagine that there's a system on an airplane and you're 30,000 feet in the air. Do you want to patch that while it's flying and you got 300 people in the airplane? No, you want to wait until it lands, get everybody off the plane, then you patch the system, because right now it's working, right now it's flying. Let's keep it that way. Land the plane, make it safe, then update the system. It's a different way that you handle things.
Oh, absolutely. And there is across aviation, there are a struggle on securing our OTs and stuff, because we have so many, not thousand, a million devices connected to the system, and it only takes one device to exploit, right? So everything you need to be thoughtful and architecture correctly. My point earlier, make sure that your architecture is having a zero trust boundary, because we trust people, but we want to verify to make sure that what they're doing is within the guardrail, within the risk that we can tolerate for the business. Because if the risk itself can disrupt operation, to your point, then we need to speak up. Are you gonna be able to take this risk? In the end of the day, I'll normally put the responsibility back to the business. You know, like if they really want to do it after we did the review, after we do the assessment, whatever they're trying to enable using AI or using technology to automate their process, if we identify the gap and it's really critical issue to the point that exploitable with the zero day or maybe in the LLM, it is vulnerable for injection and something like that. If they keep going what they're doing, and I usually put them back to, are you accepting this risk? And most of the time they don't. So if you don't, then give us more time to, have a time to put the guardrail in place, because we need to fix this. We need to have a processes to enable patches, not only just one time, continuously, right? Because the vulnerability is evolve over time. Whatever we identified 6 months ago, it might not be vulnerable until now. So those things, sometimes we have to create the story to make sure that they understand in the simplest way, because business doesn't really understand what is behind the scene, right? So it's really something that we need to collaborate to work together, you know. So
I love that so much, and I've learned that over my career. It's all about, you know, one of my mentors, and I say this a lot. I just wrote it in an article, and the editor wanted to change the words because it's not correct grammar. And I'm like, no, we're keeping that in, because I say this all the time. So I just wrote an article on NERCSIP. But anyways, the saying, and again, it came from one of my mentors, and it was like, all business is the people business. And what they meant by that is, it doesn't matter if you're the janitor, if you're the engineer, if you're the CEO, it's all about relationships. It's all about, you know, doing people. Things, mm-hmm. people, right? And it's all about, we're all salespeople. Like, we don't think about ourselves in that way. We are selling our ideas to whomever we're trying to talk to, right? So all of this is, as a cyber professional, as I can be an engineer, I can be a developer, like you said, all those types of things, you are selling your vision, your justification, your reasoning to your boss, your teammates, you know, the executive leadership above you, your clients, your customers. You are selling your vision of why this way, why these needs, all those types of things. So to your point, when you're pitching an idea, you're pitching a product, you're pitching a change, you're saying, hey, we need to do these different things. This is all sales. It's all putting it in the language that people understand. Exactly. And it's not about the buzzwords and overwhelming them with technology and how smart you are, because none of that helps sell the story that matters. Because all that matters is will they say yes?
It's funny you say that. I was speaking on aviation in Europe, and I was, as a speaker, I also watch some other CISOs speak up on there. And this is, I don't want to disclose in the company, but this is a big company, a cybersecurity firm company. And he speak about espionage, about cybersecurity term that all audience are engineer and database, professional, like data analytic and stuff. And then that came to me. So you aren't a cybersecurity professional, right? You understand what he's saying, because I don't understand at all. All he talk about is a big buzzword that we cannot correlate. And I do understand, because I'm coming from cybersecurity. But I heard you, if I'm in your position, I will not understand what he's saying. Right. So to your point, it doesn't matter if you're the smartest cybersecurity professional. If you cannot articulate the simplest way to the background of our audience, then might as well not speak, because they just go above their head. And a lot of people just doing the texting, because they could not correlate what they're saying, what he's saying. So to your point, we need to be able to articulate like a salesperson to make sure that other aisle can digest what cybersecurity objective you're trying to convey them, So
absolutely. So. It's such a big thing, right? I grew up as being that engineer. My career grew because I was, quote unquote, the smartest person in the room for my thing at the time. And that was always the way that I grew my career, is like learn stuff, be the best at this thing, and you'll excel your career. And I got to a place where I realized that was not enough. It wasn't going to take me further. Like, I was going to hit a place where I couldn't really excel anymore until I started learning these other skill sets. And those were the people side. It was the sales side. It was the, the influence, how to win friends and influence people, and how to do a PowerPoint presentation, and all the things that I learned and did along the way. It's why I went to, Ernst & Young Big Four Consulting and did all those types of things. And it's sometimes frustrating, because, I've said it myself, I think consulting firms, all they do is create PowerPoints. But there's a reason behind that, right? The reason is because those PowerPoints are the things that help people understand really complex things, right? And translate them into, oh, I understand why Sue said we needed to do this and this now. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Whereas when the technical person said it, it was just, you're speaking a language they don't understand. And it's just like, you just get crickets and they're just staring at you.
It's funny you say that, because it happened to me a lot. I have to put a different hat when I talk to different people. When I talk to executive people, they care about, okay, what you need from me, very simple. Do you need resources? Why we need it? And what is the issue you're trying to solve? And how much money you need from me? That is their approach. And then when I talk to the developer, I need to have developer language to talk to them. Hey guys, if you use this method, if you have a third party library that you calling your first method that is vulnerable, then you need to update your third party library first, and to make sure before you deploy it is up to date, so it's not vulnerable. So those things I have a different hat to speak. You know, of course, when I talk to mid-management, it's talking about, you know, resources that need to be in part of the project that, and to support me to do that. And it is, to your point, we need to really be cognizant to whom we talk to. Because if your objective trying to get budget, then don't talk low level like you talk to a developer or engineer. Because they're going to be like, "Oof, okay, move on."
Absolutely. And that's the thing, right, is you hit the nail on the head. And it's funny, we have conversations on this, and we're both cybersecurity people and technologists, and you're a developer. And you know, but all of those things don't matter if you can't have these simple conversations, if you can't put on the right hat of the person that you're talking to and understand the conversation you need to have with them, right? It's easy to talk over their head and prove how smart you are, or, you know, talk the latest buzzwords and, you know, awesome, you're smarter than me. But exactly. You still have to make me understand why it should matter, and why I want to spend money on it, why I want to put people on that, why I want to, you know, change the direction of our company, or change a process, or hire a person, or fire a person, or whatever those things are. Many times those are people conversations. Those are personal conversations. They're beyond just the technical stuff. You need to have the technical stuff to back it up, but many times it's that other level conversation that is the more powerful one.
Yeah. Sometimes I also mentor a lot of young, you know, workforce in cybersecurity. I went to a different platform to mentor them. One thing that I always told them is like, you need to be able to think out of the box. Because if you cannot do that, then you're going to be stuck in your career. So what is trajectory of your career 5 years from now? What you want? Are you going to be analyst for 5 years from now? Or you want to move to different field where you want more challenge for what you're doing? I'm always trying to encourage them to be curious. Because like saying, the reason I'm at where I'm at is because I'm always curious about what is after this, after AI, how can we make sure that we are aligned with the trend now? So even though currently I'm not working on it, I'm always thinking ahead to what is next. You know, even when I was growing up, I live in very remote village where there is no electricity, nothing.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm always curious, you know, with my mom, I'm like, what is outside this village? Is it either a city that is more vibrant than what we live now? The same thing. And throughout my career, I moved here back 33 years ago. And always that curiosity when I was little carry on, you know, over time, and it's really benefiting me. And I always tell my mentor, like, you know, be curious. It'll take you so far.
Yeah, 100%. I was also a curious kid. My dad would bring home, you know, old electronics, like old phones, like the old rotary phones.
Yeah.
And I would take them apart and take all the components out and figure out what they were and put them into buckets. And like, he had this whole box. I think his work upgraded their phones and he just took them all home because he knew I would just play with them. So I was just tearing them apart and looking at them and not being destructive. Just, I was really interested to figure out, why do all these things work together, and what is making this phone do the thing? Like, what is all in here that makes it do it? And I did the same thing with computers along the way, and I was always just able to tinker and figure out things. And it led to working on cars, and it, you know, working on engines, or not that I was ever a mechanic, but I've always been able to kind of figure things out and build a wall or do plumbing or do electrical work or whatever, that type of stuff. I've always dabbled in those things, to your point, because I had a curious mind and I was just like, well, I can figure that out. And now with YouTube and AI, like, you know, it's simple, right? It should, like, it's, you
everything
can basically walk through.
To your team. So, but how you leverage the information to enable your, you know, aspiration, your desire to basically improve yourself through learning, right? So I always tell my kid, it's like, you know, it's up to you. We have all the avenue out there compared back then before you were born. It's not widely available, but you right. said to focus on your personal development. You know, don't do something crazy and harm. I mean, you will waste your time, but you have to be cognizant and thoughtful what objective that you want to learn from all the avenue that we have from, you know, even a lot of LMS now learning a system is online. You don't have to be physically in a person, which is, you know, awesome. It can be accessible everywhere. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing. What the irony though, is that I see it. And again, I've got three kids at various ages, the oldest being 16. I see it in, it also can make you lazy. Lazy is not exactly the right word. Complacent may be a better word.
Yeah.
Right. That because it's so easy to get that information, you don't have to think about it. Again, using the analogy of my son driving home without the GPS, like he has no idea how to navigate without GPS.
Right.
Right. You know, they've never lived in a time without the internet. Like they've never right. lived in a time without streaming TV. Like we had to watch commercials. If we had TV, you had commercials on a good day. And like there was only cartoons on Saturday morning or like you literally talked about, you didn't have electricity sometimes. Like there's, your kid probably never experienced that in their lives. I know mine never experienced the things that I grew up with.
Yeah, I'm worried. And at the same time, I'm trying to learn from them what is gone through in their head, right? Is to your point, they're not lazy. When they desire to do something, they go for it and they execute it. And, you know, like my daughter applying for a job is like, Mom, don't teach me anything. I want to prove myself I can do it without your help. Which is, you know, I was wrong thinking about her, that everything she's gonna be depend on me and all the information out there. But no, she want to do it herself. She want to execute it herself to the point that, you know, okay, I guess they're not lazy, even though sometimes I think they are, but they want to be better. But they, generation Gen Z, normally they tend to, like looking at us like, you work too hard, but you don't have life. So, and at first when she said, Mom, I don't want to be like you. What you mean? I have a good career. And I'm like, you staring computer all day long. And then if something really happened, even on the weekend, you end up having like, it doesn't matter if incident or something like that. You end up, you know, leaving a family, and I don't want to be that way. I mean, in a way, I respect their opinion because who want to be consumed by like entire 24/7 consumed by technology, right? We are human. Yeah. We're not robot to the point that can auto scale. Yeah. We only have 24 hours. We only have one brain, right? So it's not like in a cloud that you, if we have so many requests that you can auto scale it. It's not that way.
Exactly.
But I think it's interesting to see our new generation doing their thing. And we need to be open-minded as a parent, right? Because, you know, they are smart kids, but we need to make sure that they understand the risk what they're taking, you know? So,
that's very true. And I think, you know, the newer mindset, they're going to change, like AI and all the technology, as well as the way our kids are interacting with it. They're going to do things differently than we did. That's for just sure. inevitable, right? That doesn't make it right or wrong. It just makes it different, right? And I assume there'll be a lot of things that they're going to figure out how to do a lot more effectively and better than we did. There'll still be some ways that we did things and grew up learning things. It'll probably be good, better, different, whatever. But it's not a comparison. It just means that they're different, right? Different doesn't mean bad. Different. Doesn't mean good. Yeah. It's just different.
It's just different. It's because on the era of when she was born 24 years ago, you know, a lot of changing in the world after 9/11, cybersecurity, ransomware, kids being exploited in social media. Even they have some cases, story that horrific, that people committed suicide because of the work that they put it in social media and stuff like that. And we as a parent, we need to, how can we protect this young generation? Because this is our future, right? So as much as we know so much in the past, how can we make sure that this kid equipped what is coming faster than we anticipated, like AI?
Yeah.
You know, how can they be okay dealing with a new trend so that they don't get harmed from it? You know, so it's always in the top of my mind about these young children. How can we make sure they have awareness of the danger, you know? So
what are some of the big things that you see coming as far as, like, you know, you talked about AI coming and, you know, kind of awareness of things that are coming. What are some of the struggles that you're seeing in the industry today? I know, you know, 20 years, it's been a long career of seeing things, but the trends are different and they're happening faster from my perspective. Like, it seems to be way more frequent, way more, you know, impactful. So what are some of the things that you're seeing and noticing?
Yeah, I'm more like, how can we govern AI?
Yep.
You know, it's right. Like, there is so many benefit, but it's also, there is harming too, if we're not having a governance around it. So I think a lot of people trying to keep up with, you know, having AI enabler, but how can we govern it? And if we're not engaging like cybersecurity governance on AI, so to make sure that AI is not biased, to make sure that AI is provide us good result as expected, you know, we need to have some governance around it. And governance doesn't matter if we need to have some, you know, access properly, like not consuming information from widely in the internet that can generate some bias, where it's not having, you know, use case or data attribute that is already been, you know, tested and used in lower environment first. You know, we don't want to deploy something that have no guardrail in it. And that is what I am projecting in the future. Is the same thing, you know, what I don't want AI is burst like everybody collapsing. You know, because part of it is AI has been the top mind of, you know, I've been in a conference talking to CTO, COO, or CEO, you know, CISO. They're trying to keep up with it. But at the same time, they're worrying that we don't have enough skill even to implement a guardrail to it, you know. Yeah. So yeah. I always encourage whatever the objective or the goal or the project that they are trying to do AI, make sure there is a governance. It doesn't matter, it's being scanned, the code being scanned, being tested, have a human loop until the AI is giving us confidence to give us a result what is expected. Otherwise, human loop is still gonna need it. And, you know, over and over, because a lot of like action, they have to have solid validation. And AI itself speed up. Like I read not long ago about IBM. If I plug in USB in my computer, is it good? And then and the AI speed up, like, yeah, it's good. And you can actually, you know, do some exploitation with using USB and stuff like that. I'm like, no, that is wrong. So we still need to have that human loop until we have our confidence level high enough. And of course, certain business, we need to be cognizant if there is involving us people's safety. You might want to not use it right away. You want to make sure that your model, your use case, your data are enough to give you that confidence. Otherwise, you know, people's safety in jeopardy, right? For banking, it's not necessary about people's safety, but you know, if you're talking about medical devices and stuff like that, using AI, it's a different ballgame.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, obviously, I've spent a lot of time in critical infrastructure, OT, that kind of thing. And we do things a lot slower many times in those spaces. You know, we'll implement things a lot slower, take a lot more time, really test it out, make sure we're confident in it. And usually we're going to have alternate paths. Like, you know, you're going to have an alpha and a bravo. You're going to have an A and a B option. So if primary fails, I've got a backup. And that doesn't mean just like a backup device. It means a backup path, a backup process, so that I can, you know, break glass in case of emergency and pull out the manual process to really be able to still do the thing and be able to get home, right? Because lives are at risk many times in these scenarios.
Exactly, right? Exactly. We need to really understand the objective, what you're trying to implement. Otherwise, people just plug in the AI without any consideration, and it's going to be chaotic if people are not consider governing it and what type information and how they're being used, you know. So safety is always number one. It doesn't matter business or cybersecurity, you know, if there is a jeopardize people's safety, you need to put really thought to it. It's not only just, okay, I want to stand up solution and then be done with it. This is human life you dealing with. If impacting human life, you have to put a guardrail in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we talked a lot about different things along the way. You know, what are the come up over the horizon? What is the one thing? And it's probably some of the stuff we just doubled down on, but what's one thing that you see come up over the horizon that's exciting? And maybe one thing that's a little bit scary or concerning that you see in trends or that may be coming?
Yeah, in cybersecurity, because I am very involved with Safe Life strategy, trying to implement cybersecurity in early state instead of afterthought, after being deployed. I'm always that way because my background is a developer. What is a good thing about AI in a cybersecurity, as you know, if you have a function in cybersecurity function, there are always a small group of people. It's never really a match with IT workforce.
Sure.
A cybersecurity either 1 to the 10, we're lucky if even 3 to the 10, you know. So it's always limited resources. With AI, I think we can leverage so much to do the processes, the automation. Like, for example, if we want to perform a risk assessment, if we are standing up agent to perform a risk assessment where the agent can really learn about different, you know, threat modeling, the vulnerability that tied up to API, or, for example, if they, even though we're not going to be knocked down 100% of it, even though if we have a 50% of it, that's less burden for cybersecurity folks. The most, I call it the low-hanging fruit. If the AI can help us with the low-hanging fruit, then we can focus more on a prominent issue that maybe we have access control that we need to focus on, where it cannot be detected by system or by automation. So we, as a cybersecurity professional, we can focus what matter most. With AI, that is exciting thing for me to see the a threat modeling that more vendors using AI, or even the detection, even the remediation, auto remediation. They have agentic AI that will call a certain ability and update the library automatically without any. Like so many resources to do so. So that is a positive side of it. But negative side of it, if they just fully trust AI, not having human look, we're not that mature yet, you know. So we need to be, you know, like even half of half. If some of low-hanging vulnerability can be tackled by automation and AI, we still need to have a human look to do some check and balance, you know. And there is, I'm afraid that people think, oh, we have AI, we're done with it. You know, no, we're not done. We're not mature enough to the point that we have confidence that the AI agent can generate the result we wanted, you know. So
right.
There is a bad and good about that. So yeah. A lot of people are trying to sell the product. Oh, this is AI. But when we integrate it to the environment, like, that's not that good as that thing there.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of all the smart devices that showed up in the market, you know, 10 years ago. You know, you got AI, or you got, you know, embedded IP addresses in your toaster oven and your coffee machine. And it's just like, I don't need my coffee machine to be smart. I could just go click the button. Like, I don't. Right. Yeah, I get it. Like, I don't need everything to be smart. Just like I don't need everything to have AI in it. Like, everything doesn't have to have AI. You don't, like, software developers, companies, startups. Every product does not have to have AI in it. Like, it doesn't. And you go to RSA, you go to Black Hat, you go to these technical conferences,
yeah,
and they all have some kind of AI flair on it, because that's what every, what's your AI capability? Do you have a local model? Like, what can you do with AI? It's just, oh my gosh. Like, we've been doing most of them aren't even true AI. It's just automation. It's LLM. It's scripting. It's whatever.
Exactly.
But they have AI.
Yeah, and that thing is like, you know, unless you are in a research program, you know, you can speak up what it is. To your point, some of solution is very premature being deployed and presented to a client or customer, and they claim themselves, oh, this is the best of the best. I'm like, hold on. You know, don't do that, because you're going to have a pushback. Like, everything cannot be just enable AI. So
exactly. Well, and we already established it many times. It's just about doing the basics, and you don't have to have the fanciest tools to necessarily do the basics, because, you know, having good password management, you know, making people use multi-factor authentication, like, you know, there's just basics that you can do that don't need AI.
Don't need AI.
And are not fancy or expensive.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of hackers, I'm a white hacker too, you know. So
yep.
A lot of hackers, you know, if they can identify SQL injection, and SQL injection can be mitigated or can remediate it very easily, if I can exploit it with most common vulnerability, most common thing that can be exploited, that means their cybersecurity hygiene is not that good. So right. I can go to the access control and stuff like that to get into the database back. And if the small thing they cannot tackle, you know, that means, but to your point, people don't really fix the most basic, but they want more advanced to the point crashing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's so true. Well, this has been awesome. I love the conversation. I love the path that we went on. Like I told you, I never have an understanding of where we're going to go with these conversations. And I always enjoy where they get to and the outcome of them, because it's just an organic conversation where we go where the conversation leads us. Right. And it's not to, you know, take it any place we don't want to go or all that. So, you know, thank you very much for the conversation. Thank you very much for sharing your time and your experience with me and the audience as well. So with that, is there any call to action you want anybody? How could people get a hold of you, reach out?
Yes.
You talked about doing some mentoring, things like that. So anything you want to share?
Yeah, I'm currently standing up startup still help company called Dark Defensive. That is something that I want to prioritize this time. And so far, it's something that I'm passionate about, so that people can focus on doing remediation, not only just internal organization, but if they can have some insight from what is being disclosed in the dark web, and they can map it into their framework into their prioritization to fix the issue. I believe so much on my startup that can save on the cost of doing remediation, because a big company, small company, medium company, they have a blind spot, right? Sometimes they invest on so much budget to fix the internal network, but they forget that they have a blind spot. Then they need to put it into equation to prioritize, to map it, whether or not their credential being leaked, yep, and their have a ransomware ready to target their organization. Hopefully my solution can help the organization to prioritize what matter most to fix their vulnerability. And that is just something that I'm passionate about, and I want to put it into solutions so that people can help to protect their organization.
Outstanding. Well, we'll definitely include all the details in that in the show notes. So definitely anybody that's listening, if you're interested reaching out to Sue and learning more about that, check in the show notes. We'll have all the details there. Sue, thank you so much for your time today. It was a blessing to talk to you. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate your time, and I'm glad you're in Florida in the warmth and not in colder places where you're having to deal with snow and ice.
Thank you, Aaron. It's such an honor to be here, and I'm so happy to share my knowledge, and I'm honored to be here, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.